You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in on our Thursday episode. It's Tender Thursday. We're going to continue diving in on several impending free agents for the Seahawks. Plus, we're going to continue our rookie spotlight with fifth-round pick Alton Robinson. Look back at his rookie season with the Seahawks. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Rob, we've talked about it a bunch already up to this point. The Seahawks have a lot of decisions to make in the secondary at the cornerback position. They've got Shaquille Griffin. They've got Quentin Dunbar, both of them set to hit free agency. DJ Reed and Trey Flowers will both be back. They are under contract, but both of them are going to be approaching free agency in the near future. So long-term, a lot of question marks at that position. They've got to decide if they're going to bring back Griffin and or Dunbar. If they let both of them go, they're going to have to probably draft a corner or two with their limited draft capital. So this is a position that's certainly an area of need. And that leads me to a topic that has been big on social media the last couple of weeks. And now there appear to be a few grumblings out there that maybe, just maybe, Richard Sherman could come back to the Seahawks this offseason. I thought a few weeks ago that it was an absolute long shot, but it's clear he's not going to be with the 49ers anymore. And you and I talked about it yesterday, the lack of cap space for teams, an older player like Sherman, he might have to settle for significantly less to play for a contender next season. And ironically, the Seahawks may be one of the teams best suited to sign him due to positional need. And obviously it's a great system fit for him, knowing early in his career how dominant he was on the outside.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, is that there are so many things that line up very well for there to be this reunion between Richard Sherman and the Seahawks. As you just explained, that the Seahawks have two of their better cornerbacks are already going to be pending free agents. I think that Shaquille Griffin is going to have the opportunity to break the bank. I think that he really is going to get a big contract offer that might come from Seattle. It might come from elsewhere. If the Griffin is, in fact, playing somewhere else, obviously, Seattle has to be able to find themselves a replacement. Quentin Dunbar, we saw just flashes of his potential, but never enough consistency, at least in my mind, to warrant any kind of a significant financial expense. Kind of the exact opposite of what we saw with Richard Sherman. Even when he was nicked up, he was still effective. And when he was completely healthy, he was very effective for the 49ers over the last couple of years. Not only would he be an improvement in some ways, if Seattle was able to retain him, obviously you would be stealing from a divisional rival, and that would be significant. Richard Sherman, being the veteran that he is, as well proven as he is going to have some options out there. But he also strikes me as a guy who's most likely to want to stay on the West Coast, most likely going to want to be able to compete for a division title, if not a Super Bowl title. And so again, those are all reasons why I think that there is a possibility for a reunion with Sherman and the Seahawks. It's not like Earl Thomas. It's not like some of the other players in the past who, very much burnt those bridges when they left town. I think with Richard Sherman, the competitor that he is, the Seahawks know that. And so I don't think that anything that he said or did during his time in San Francisco would damage his possibility of being able to return to the Seahawks.
And I wrote an article about this earlier today. This is before I had the opportunity to speak with a couple of sources that are well-informed that indicated that Sherman would have interest, at least would be open to the idea of coming back to the Seahawks. But when you consider his DNA, his makeup, this is a guy, ever since he came into the league as a fifth-round pick out of Stanford, he's always been, this is the way I view it, he's always been a player that is seeking vengeance. Think about it. When he came in the league, I'm a fifth-round pick, overlooked. He remembered every defensive back that was picked before him. And you could talk to him right now, and he would name them all off. And he used that as motivation. When the Seahawks said, you know what, we don't want to pay you the money you're going to earn in 2018. You're coming off an Achilles injury. We're going to cut you. Again, he was being doubted. So what did he do? He went and he got revenge by going to a division rival and eventually leading the 49ers to a division title in 2019. And so that's just the way his makeup is. And I look back at the fact that really the defining play that really ruined the Seahawks, the end of that Super Bowl against the Patriots. It really was something they just could not get past. This would be an opportunity for Richard Sherman to be able to once again get redemption, get some vengeance. How great of a storyline would it be for him to come back to Seattle, go full circle after everything he went through, the fallout with the team getting released, to come back and chase after another Lombardi trophy where his career started at the beginning? I just think it would want to be one of the biggest storylines out there. And I think it would be highly successful as long as he can stay healthy. And I look at him at this stage of his career. Richard Sherman is a really intelligent guy. I'm sure he's self-aware enough to know that he's going to be 33 years old, coming off a season where he only played in 5 games. He's been battling injuries. I think he knows he's not going to be able to break the bank this year, especially with a salary cap situation. Why not go take a solid financial offer with a team that knows you well, a scheme that you know well, that you can still be successful in, and go after another Lombardi trophy? Again, I think it would be a phenomenal storyline. Both the player and the team could certainly use each other in 2021.
No, I absolutely agree. I think that's all the more reason why that there is a good possibility this could actually happen. You know, that's the thing is you go back and you remember Richard Sherman, the player coming out of Stanford, going to the Senior Bowl and all of the questions of how well he was going to be able to make that transition from wide receiver to cornerback. And you kind of commented about on, you know, all the defensive backs that were selected ahead of him and how well that Sherman might remember that. You know, one of the thing that he might remember from that Senior Bowl game itself is the fact that he got beat deep late in that game. I believe it was right before halftime in that game. And Mike Mayock was the color commentator during that game and kind of criticized Richard Sherman a little bit. And so I was mentioning before about some of the teams that Richard Sherman might be a good fit with. I believe that the Las Vegas Raiders might be one of those kinds of teams. But because Richard Sherman is known for being as highly competitive as he is, for having that long memory of people who have been criticized him in the past, then perhaps John Gruden, Mike Mayock, and Las Vegas Raiders may not be a great fit. The 49ers, because of all their different salary cap issues, they might not be a good fit. The Los Angeles Rams might not be a good fit. Again, if we're just looking at this from a geographical perspective, with a player from, you know, Richard Sherman, of course, played his college ball at Stanford, had a lot of the success in Seattle, it does make a lot of sense. It's just going to be interesting to see if Seattle is willing to go back down that road again. As you just mentioned a moment ago, Richard Sherman is 33 years old. He does have a history, unfortunately, at this point, of having several significant injuries. And Seattle cannot just put all of their eggs in one basket with a 33-year-old corner. They're going to have to perhaps invest some of their draft picks, the only 4 that they have at this point, invest some of those draft picks in the cornerback position. So I think that Richard Sherman would be a huge step towards making Seattle's defensive backfield that much stronger in 2021. But I also think it cannot be the only step that the Seahawks take.
Oh no, they're going to have to make some other moves. But I think what this all boils down to is how much money is Richard Sherman going to expect? Is winning going to trump the ability to get another payday? I mean, especially right now with the financial climate in the NFL, like I said, I think Sherman is aware enough to know that he is not in a position now, coming off a year he missed 11 games at his age, all those different factors, where he's going to get a ton of money in free agency. But I could see like a 2-year, $14 million deal, $7 million a year, maybe throw some incentives in there. He's his own agent. He can work that stuff out with the Seahawks. But I feel like the money could line up here. I think it's a great scheme fit. We know what Richard Sherman has done in this defense in the past, and I think he still is a more than talented enough football player to be able to come in and give this team a lift out at the cornerback position, and they have a need. This is certainly a position of need. It would be interesting to go from Shaquille Griffin, who was supposed to be the heir apparent for Richard Sherman, to then going back to Sherman. But we've seen things like this, and the Seahawks have brought back players that left disgruntled. We saw it with Marshawn Lynch a few years ago. And so this is definitely not out of the question. I think this is a storyline that is worth watching. I think there is certainly a chance that we could see Richard Sherman back in blue and green next year. When we come back in the second quarter, speaking of free agency, it's Tinder Thursday. Rob and I are going to be checking out 4 impending free agents for the Seahawks, 2 on offense, 2 on defense. And we're going to decide whether to swipe right and keep them or swipe left and let them walk in free agency. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Thursday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. February is Black History Month. The Locked On Podcast Network is honoring the challenges and success of Black men and women in sports with a new series called Locked On Presents More Than the Game. Right now, you can hear Candace Cooper of Locked On Tar Heels and Eric Ayala of Locked On Women's Basketball discuss the opportunities and challenges that come with being a Black woman in sports. Subscribe to the Locked On Presents podcast feed on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. It's Tinder Thursday. This has been a very popular segment for our listeners, at least those of you that reached out to us on social media. So we're going to keep this show rolling here. Four more upcoming free agents, unrestricted free agents. We'll get to restricted free agents here in the next week or two. But four players that are scheduled to become unrestricted free agents when the new league year opens next month. We're going to decide whether we want to swipe right and keep them or swipe left and let them walk. Let's start an offense, and we'll start with a player, Cedric Ebwehi, his first start filling in for Brandon Shell when the Seahawks played the Eagles. I mentioned this on the podcast back then in week 12, coming out of that game. Seattle won, but that was one of the worst performances that I've seen by an offensive lineman in the Pete Carroll era. And we know that's saying something with the offensive line struggles that they've had, but to his credit, when he got another opportunity a few weeks later and Brandon Shell was still dealing with his ankle injury, Ebwehi didn't just step back in the lineup and play better. He played really well, only gave up six combined quarterback pressures starting the last three games of the season. And oh, by the way, it was against the Washington football team and Chase Young and company, the San Francisco 49ers, who still had Eric Armstead and a number of good pass rushers, and the Rams in week 16. Those were the three teams he started against, and he gave up six quarterback pressures, no sacks, and just one quarterback hit. He also played well as a run blocker. And so this creates an interesting dynamic because the Seahawks don't have much depth at the tackle position. And Duane Brown's going to be 36 in August. Ebwehi is still a young enough player that maybe there is the potential for him to still be a starter in this league. And so I think this is an interesting conundrum for the Seahawks, whether they're going to re-sign him or not.
Yeah, I think ultimately they're going to strongly consider swiping right and bringing him back, just because you are talking about a player who is just 29 years old, does have starting experience with the left and right tackle positions. As you mentioned, Corbin, he struggled, in his first opportunity of extended regular season play this year. But the fact that he stepped up his play when Seattle needed him most, I think is really going to speak volumes to the Seahawks. And perhaps it's going to speak volumes to a bunch of other NFL teams out there as well. But, you know, the 2021 NFL draft class is, again, pretty strong at the offensive tackle positions. So I think that the teams that are looking for a future player that they might be able to develop and become a starter, then I think that they might go with that younger approach. Seattle generally does that, except along the offensive line. They've shown kind of a curious unwillingness to invest in young offensive tackles, or at least early selections in young offensive tackles. But at the same time, because they've had such stellar play from Duane Brown at left tackle. And then they had such, pretty solid play from Brandon Shell on the right tackle position here this past season, then I think that it does make a lot of sense financially and in terms of just continuity to be able to bring back Cedric Ebwehi, assuming that he is willing to sign for a similar type of deal as the $2.3 million contract that he had on a one-year deal last year by Seattle. Now, he's probably looking for a little bit longer deal now, and so that's what's going to be interesting to find out what the financial particulars are going to be that he is asking for. But at the same time, I do believe that he played well enough, is young enough, and is also relatively inexpensive enough that all those reasons to me suggest that Cedric Oboye could be a Seahawk in 2021.
This is one of those situations that is so difficult when you're trying to decide what you're going to do in free agency, especially a year like this where money is tight across the league. I think a player like Oboye, he's probably going to have to settle for a near veterans minimum deal just because teams aren't going to have the money to pay him $2.5 million like the Seahawks did last year, even with how well he played at the end of the season. And this is a tough one because you look at his career track record, Oboye, he really struggled the couple years that he got to start, extended number of games for the Cincinnati Bengals, really poor pass protection, struggled as a run blocker. He had one game that started against the Eagles where he looked equally as abysmal out there for the Seahawks. But again, he really seemed to turn the corner against three outstanding defensive lines at the end of the year. And so this is going to be one of those strange ones. I don't know that the Seahawks are going to re-sign him, but if I am in charge, I'm John Schneider in the front office, I'm trying to find a way to swipe right here just because you already lost Chad Wheeler. We're not even going to go down that road, why he's not on the roster, but you don't have him. Tommy Champion is the only other tackle on the roster. You have four draft picks right now. You can certainly draft a tackle with one of those. This is a really good class, as you mentioned, but I think that Oboye can be a really solid backup at both tackle positions. He proved he can do it last year, and I think you can re-sign him at a really affordable rate. And so me personally, I'm swiping right, and I'm bringing Oboye back. He's one of the few free agents so far that I actually have opted to re-sign from this group. Now, we're going to the ever-so-important fullback position, Nick Ballore, who I think has played about five snaps at fullback the last 2 years. They just don't use fullbacks. Now, I'm not sure that's going to change much with Shane Waldron as the coordinator, because if it's anything like the Rams, they rarely have had two backs in the backfield. They like single back 11 and 12 personnel, but Nick Ballore is still a player that has a ton of value on special teams. Even though he's getting to be an older player, he was one of the league leaders in tackles on kick and punt coverage last year. And so from that standpoint, we know how much Pete Carroll values special teams. Maybe they'll bring him back for another season, especially if they don't need a fullback really with the offense that they're going to be running.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we heard all year long that you know, Pete Carroll would kind of, you know, brag about his special teams unit. And a big part of that was the Pro Bowler, Nick Ballore. And there's not a lot of Pro Bowlers out there 32 years old playing their second or third position the way that Ballore did, of course, playing some linebacker early in his NFL career, fullback, as you mentioned. That's the thing, is this really comes down to what are the Seahawks want their offense to look like under the new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. If they do want to have that element of a true lead blocking fullback, then as good as Nick Ballore is, as reliable of a player he is, that's never really been his game. He is not that just punisher of, you know, a human cinder block that can put people on their back the way that the former Seahawk great Mac Strong used to do for Sean Alexander back in the day. He is not the elite receiver that Michael Robinson or John L. Williams were out of the backfield for the Seahawks either. And so that's the thing, is that he does all those things fairly well. As we just talked about a moment ago, he's a terrific special teams performer. I think Seattle would like to bring him back. I think that they feel like they are almost stealing a roster spot because of his positional versatility, the way they used to do some of those things with their offensive linemen who could also play defensive linemen in a pinch and things of that nature. I think that they like that idea here with Ballore. But at the same time, again, we're talking about an aging player. He's 32 years old as it stands right now. He was paid a little bit over $1 million a year ago. If you're able to bring him back on that type of a contract, just considering how critical special teams were to Seattle's success this past season, I think that you'd like to be able to bring him back. But at the same time, if Seattle goes more with the real run-heavy approach that you and I have at times, you know, kind of emphasized Seattle may want to consider, then I think that you have to look for a little bit more of a true lead blocking fullback. And if you are not going to use the fullback at all, which essentially Seattle did this past year with Brian Schottenheimer, and as you just mentioned, the Rams certainly didn't use with Shane Waldron, then I almost wonder if maybe you shouldn't kind of cut bait at this point, try to get one of your other younger linebackers, like a Ben Burkervin, to kind of step into that role that Nick Ballore played as a special teams, you know, demon throughout his career in Seattle.
Yeah, I think I'm going to swipe left here, even though Ballore was a big part of their special team success a year ago. If he is getting a 1 year, around $1 million contract at league minimum, then maybe late in free agency, depending on the cap situation, they can bring him back, and I would have no issue with that. But you just got to wonder with the offensive scheme, the wrinkles that they're going to be throwing in here. I would be really surprised if they ever use a fullback, aside from maybe short yardage situations up at the goal line. And I don't think they're going to want to use a roster spot in that regard. I think they also have seen some of the young players really step up on special teams, like Cody Barton, second half of the year. He was making a lot of big plays there. They've got some other young players that were really stepping up on special teams as well. And so I don't know necessarily that the need is going to be there when maybe they could allocate their resources to some different positions. It really wouldn't be a big deal if they re-sign him or not. I just personally would probably go a different direction just because they're not going to be using him as a fullback. He's just a special teams guy. He's important in that regard, but I think you can find some other guys that can pick up the slack that are going to be younger that you can get that are going to, yeah, they're going to be under club control. I think that's the big deal here. And then on defense, a couple of players on defense. We'll go to the secondary. Demaryius Randall, former first-round pick. And he actually was out of the league for a little bit last year before the Seahawks signed him to their practice squad. He ended up being on the active roster for a handful of games, got a few snaps on defense, still a relatively young player. We talk about that special teams aspect. Randall played quite a bit on special teams. He's a younger player than, say, Nick Ballore. You're going to have to pay him veteran minimum. He's not going to be getting more than that at this point. He's several years from being a starter. So this might be a player, because he's younger and he has that first-round pedigree, that maybe is more worth bringing back on a one-year deal than, say, somebody like Nick Ballore that's getting to the point where he's going to be entering the twilight of his career.
That's a really good point. I think that because Demaryius Randall is, again, you mentioned the first-round pedigree, that's something that Seattle has been willing to kind of roll the dice on. Can these athletes recapture the magic that allowed them to be drafted so highly in the first place? He's 29 years old. He also has positional versatility, has played both safety roles, has dropped down and played that nickel cornerback spot as well. And then, of course, the special teams element of that. So all of those factors are reasons why I think that Seattle may want to consider bringing Demaryius Randall back. Let me argue that point for just a moment, though. I would argue that at least at the safety position, that Seattle is about as deep there as they are any position on their entire roster. You fully expect that the team is going to be, you know, extending Jamal Adams at some point. That's just going to put that much more money into that position. You're really excited about the upside of Marquise Blair, even though he has struggled with durability over his first couple of years in the league. So all of those reasons are why I think that maybe Seattle decides ultimately to swipe left on Demaryius Randall, that if he was available just as a street free agent this past year, then he might be in that exact same situation. And because you have the young talent that you already believe in, you're already invested in, then I would probably roll with the players that you already have got.
Yeah, I think I'm going to swipe left too, even though I could see the merit in bringing him back. This is certainly a player that could still be on the streets, as you mentioned, in training camp, and maybe last minute they bring him in. But I don't think there's going to be a rush to sign him, so I'm going to swipe left. And then that leads to our last guy here. Demontre Moore had another up-and-down season. He gave the Seahawks some quality reps early in the year. They signed him at the end of training camp. He was familiar with the scheme, having played in Seattle a few years earlier. And then, unfortunately, he got suspended again for performance-enhancing drugs. So that's just been something he has not been able to get away from. But Seattle brought him back at the end of the year after the suspension. They didn't cut him. They actually reinstated him to the active roster, and he played some meaningful snaps both on defense and special teams at the end of the year. I think at this point that he is a very similar player to Randall in the sense that I expect that as a street free agent, if you wanted to bring him back for depth, and he's a really solid special teams player for a big guy, he can play kick and punt coverage. He had a couple big hits on kick coverage last year. You could certainly sign him for veteran minimum when training camp comes around. They were able to wait till the end of camp last year. I could see them doing something similar this season, especially if somebody gets banged up in camp at the defensive end spot. They could bring him in. But for now, again, another player that I'm not prioritizing, and I'm going to swipe left. Maybe I'll change my mind and try to go back down that avenue when you get later into the offseason, into training camp.
Yeah, we talked a couple of, I think it was earlier this week or last week, about the defensive tackle position and what a one of the first dominoes could be Jaron Reed. And what if Seattle decides to re-sign him or extend him, then that is going to have a huge effect on the rest of Seattle's defensive line. To me, this is a little bit what Demontre Moore is going to depend on what Seattle chooses to do with Carlos Dunlap. Because you know that they're very excited about the upside of Darrell Taylor and Alton Robinson, you know. But at the same time, you also wonder about who are going to be the veteran influencers on this team. If the team retains Carlos Dunlap, same with Benson Mayoa, then you feel pretty good about your first four or five outside edge rushers. But if they are unable to do so for whatever reason, then Demontre Moore can at least give you some reasonable snaps at that defensive end position. He is not as gifted, in my opinion, as any of the other four players that we just mentioned: Carlos Dunlap, Mayoa, Taylor, and Robinson. And so because of that fact, he would definitely be one of the lower priority players, a player that has given you some meaningful snaps on special teams. But again, you'd like to think that some of your younger edge rushers would be able to play that similar role. So I am a fan of Demontre Moore. I think that he actually can give you some meaningful snaps. But at the same time, at 29 years old, he is a guy who basically has already kind of reached his peak. And you have a couple of young edge rushers that you just drafted that are hopefully still ascending. And so at this point, for me, I would be swiping left on Demontre Moore as well.
Yeah, really the big factor for me swiping left, another big factor, is the reliability factor too. I really thought maybe he had turned the corner and then unfortunately got in trouble again and was suspended for 6 games. And the Seahawks brought him back, so they were forgiving about that. But I know Pete Carroll, that was something that was eating at him even after they re-signed him. He was just hoping that he could stay out of trouble and he'd really turn to the page. And so I think that's another factor here that probably will lead to, at minimum, him not being re-signed anytime soon. He could come back in training camp. We'll just have to see how it plays out. The Carlos Dunlap factor is certainly something to watch too. If he's not brought back, then yeah, there's a need to have another veteran presence there. Maybe they could go the cheap route and bring more back. We'll just have to see. When we return to the third quarter, we're going to switch gears to the rookie spotlight. We just mentioned Alton Robinson a couple of times in that conversation. Now we're going to look back at his rookie season after he was drafted in the fifth round out of Syracuse. How did he perform compared to expectations? And what can we expect from him moving forward as he takes on a bigger role in Seattle's pass rush? We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website and use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. I'm Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Thursdays on Locked On NFL are a must-listen as Ryan Tracy and Jake Liskow break down teams across the NFL from an analytics and team-building perspective. Get the expert analysis on your favorite teams from Ryan and Jake every Thursday. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. We are now officially into the second half of Seattle's 2020 draft class in our rookie spotlight, and you could make a strong argument. I ended up picking Jordan Brooks as the Seahawks defensive rookie of the year, but I had to think two or three times and ponder about this one because Alton Robinson had a surprisingly good rookie season for the Seahawks. I want to take a step back though, Rob, before we start talking about his actual performance on the field this past season. I want to go back to when the Seahawks picked him. And you and I had talked about Alton Robinson a few times in the pre-draft process. He was a defensive end that intrigued both of us, but there were some question marks in regard to his effort, what kind of shape he was going to be in for whoever picked him, what he would look like when he got to training camp. And he only had 4 sacks his last year at Syracuse. It was a disappointing regression after posting 10 sacks his junior season for the Orange. And so there were a lot of red flags that people were looking at. You could see the talent on tape, but it just seemed like his senior year, he wasn't able to put things back together. And you could say that about Syracuse the program in general. The last couple of years have been really rough for them when they looked like a program that was going to be on the upswing. And I think that certainly impacted some of the star players like Alton Robinson. But this was certainly a fifth-round pick with high upside, but it also looked like one that maybe had some bust potential. And luckily for the Seahawks, at least in the first season, it looks like it's much more likely it's going to be the first one where they really found a gem.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is Alton Robinson always has shown that the thing that you need most if you're going to be a successful edge rusher in the NFL, and that is just that initial get-off speed. He has that initial juice to be able to cross the face of tackles. Where he struggles a little bit is he doesn't have that elite core flexibility to be able to dip under the edge of the offensive tackles, corner, and be able to explode on the ball carrier. That's one of the areas that Daryl Taylor, who of course Seattle selected in the second round, is much better. He just has better core flexibility to be able to dip and rip and move. All right. But at the same time, Alton Robinson does have that initial straight line speed. And if you pair that with other effective edge rushers, then he can put up some pretty gaudy numbers. And that's, as you mentioned, in his junior year, he had 10 sacks and he had a very talented edge rusher opposite him that year who also had a big season. Both of them struggled in the 2019 campaign. That's one of the reasons why their stock started to slip. Where he really intrigued me, not just his junior tape, not just the fact that his senior tape, I still saw a lot of the same traits, but there was a scouting him in person at the Senior Bowl. He, again, showed that initial explosiveness. He showed that he was in good shape. And then also during the game itself, the Senior Bowl game itself, he had a pretty splashy performance there as well. So to me, all of those things screamed that this is a guy who steps up his play when the lights are shining brightest. And that's the kind of guy that the Seahawks and frankly every other club should be looking for on day three. I thought that he had a quality rookie season. To me, it's exciting because he didn't get that much playing time. And yet he still was able to produce pretty respectable numbers. I am very excited about the combination of he and Daryl Taylor kind of working in tandem, especially if Seattle has a quality interior pass rush, because frankly, I'm not so sure that Robinson is ever going to be an 8 or a 10 sack NFL guy on his own. But as a complementary threat, because he does have enough of a motor to keep playing hard, because he has shown the ability to work his hands. He had 5 forced fumbles during his college career. That's something I think that you can expect to see happen a little bit more often in the NFL, is it continue to be a bit of a pass rusher and also be able to harass quarterbacks a little bit, create some turnovers.
And I think you and I were able to realize pretty quickly in training camp, it's ironic to an extent, because I remember we could go back and listen to the episode after the first couple training camp practices, that Pete Carroll sounded like he was concerned about where Alton Robinson's weight was at. He showed up around 270 pounds, and apparently the first day or two just didn't look very good. But I don't know what happened. There was just a light switch that came on in that third practice, and he was just dominant out there. Really, the rest of training camp, he was one of the most impressive young players on the field for the Seahawks, and you could hear Pete Carroll talking about his tone changed significantly over the next couple of weeks. Instead of saying, well, his weight maybe is a little higher than we wanted, he started talking about he can play both the base defensive end and Leo spot because he's big enough to play 5 tech, but he's athletic enough, has enough burst off the edge that he can play the Leo position as well. So it went from being something that was questioned to being, wow, this really changes the player in a good way, and he makes him more versatile. He can play more roles for us. So I think what was really surprising is that he didn't dress for either of the first couple games for the Seahawks. He was a healthy scratch despite having a really good training camp, and it took a few weeks to get him on the field. And I'm just going to say this right now. I think one of the biggest regrets that Pete Carroll and his staff had to have had when the season ended, you look at the numbers. Alton Robinson gave you 4 sacks, 5 tackles for loss, 4 quarterback hits. He got a respectable 66.7 Pro Football Focus grade as well as a rookie. He was in the mid-60s as a pass rusher and a run defender. He flashed in both areas. I think one of the biggest regrets this coaching staff probably has is they didn't get him enough snaps early on. He only played 29% of their snaps as a rookie, 336, and he put up the productivity that I just mentioned. And so maybe the other thing that was impressive, more impressive than even just his overall stats, is when he made the big plays. He had what was basically a game-ending sack against Dak Prescott when they beat the Cowboys. He had a huge sack in the second 49ers game. He just seemed to show up. You mentioned playing at his best when the lights were on him. You really could see that at the end of games. He really came through in clutch situations, which to me bodes really well for his future in 2021 and beyond.
No, exactly. That's the thing, that he was kind of one of their closers. And that's what you want to see from a young player. That's what Carlos Dunlap brought the Seahawks almost immediately. We saw the immediate impact that Jamal Adams had for the Seahawks. Obviously, those are two all-pro level defenders. To see a fifth-round rookie be able to show some of those same types of flashes is what's so exciting about him. And we kind of talked about in the opening quarter about the possibility of Richard Sherman returning to the Seahawks, and talk about a guy who kind of plays with an always burning flame of wanting to prove his doubters wrong. That's exactly what you want to see from Allen Robinson. I mean, this is a guy, again, in his junior year, he was everybody's All-American. This was a guy who was being viewed as a possible first or second round selection. And so for him to fall that far down on draft day, for him to, and the Seahawks kind of mentioned this, that this had nothing to do with their evaluation, but I think in a way it probably did, is the fact that he wound up working with Cliff Avril here in a relatively local gym. It's not so much that he was working with Cliff Avril that I think might have swayed the Seahawks, but the fact that he was turning that anger of this, you know, his so-called falling stock into fuel to continue working out. That's one of the reasons why he came up a little bit heavier, is because he physically was bigger and stronger. There's a lot of guys who show up too heavy because maybe they're eating too much or drinking too much or whatever the case might be. Allen Robinson was working too much in some ways. And so I think it kind of caught the Seahawks by surprise. They were looking for a guy who was more in that 250 or 255 pound range that might be able to scream off the edge. And that's not what they got. Robinson showed his strength at the point of attack. And I think because of that, he was not being used as an edge rusher early on. And that's part of the reason why he didn't see the field early. But again, once that Seattle started to kind of get their defense figured out a little bit more, they played a little bit more consistently, got a few more weapons to complement Robinson, that's where he really started to step up his play in the second half of the year.
When we look to this next season, and you mentioned it, I don't know that Robinson's ever going to be a guy that gets you 8 to 10 sacks in a season. I think if he gets enough snaps, maybe the potential is there. But you have the Daryl Taylor factor that is looming over this. Daryl Taylor was drafted in the second round. They traded up to get him for a reason. They are hoping now that he is healthy. He returned to practice during the playoffs, didn't get to play in any games last season, but he's healthy. They're hoping that he can emerge as that starting Leo and can really wreak havoc off the edge getting after quarterbacks. But they now have a fallback option, a 1A, 1B type situation with Allen Robinson. And that's a really good situation to have, where you have two really good emerging young pass rushers. And so he might not be a starter on this defensive line, but I think he's going to get a lot more snaps next year. I would expect an uptick, maybe 10%, 15% more snaps for him next year. And if he's able to be as efficient as he was last season, you're looking at a guy that might get you 6 or 7 sacks, double-digit quarterback hits, a couple forced fumbles. If he's able to do that, you've already hit a home run with your fifth-round selection. And this is still a very young player that has a chance 2 or 3 years down the road that he could be a starter caliber player, which when you are able to find those types of talents on day 3, that is always a feather in the cap for your scouting department.
No, exactly, especially in a year like last year where it was not perceived to be a real good edge rushing class. There was only 3 or 4 defensive ends that were drafted among the first 50 selections. You know, Daryl Taylor, of course, Seattle, as you mentioned, trade up to get him. And he was a player that, you know, most people in the NFL believe was going to miss significant time during his rookie season due to the medical issues that wound up costing him his entire rookie year for the Seahawks. So for Seattle to have been able to find a very productive edge rusher that late in the draft, to me, just kind of reinforces the strong reputation that Seattle's scouting staff has developed, has earned over the last several years of being at their best on day 3.
Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Just go to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Be sure to leave us a review as well. Coming up on our Blue Friday show, I'll be joined by Nick Lee, and we are going to be conducting our first mock draft of the offseason. Really looking forward to the opportunity to break down some prospects and bring in some new talent for the Seahawks. It's going to be much tougher this season with only four draft picks to start our mock drafts, but really looking forward to that. Hope you'll be listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.